Hey, it's the Pete here on a cold Sunday morning as I record this. Welcome to episode 27 of the 666 cast. Sorry, my voice actually does sound like it's early morning, like I just woke up. I actually have been up for a couple hours, but, No, 1 hour, I guess. But it's cold here in New York. It's low 50s. Wow, 51 right now, as I record this anyway. This week's episode is actually thematically going to be a two-parter, because, as you'd imagine, the fall of the American Empire would be a difficult thing to encapsulate in just 30 minutes, and I don't like to have the podcast go much longer than 30 minutes. I don't like it when any podcast goes longer than 30 minutes. But that's just me. Not that I'm complaining about any of my good friends who make podcasts longer than 30 minutes. There's a funny thing. Actually, this part of the podcast, or this part of the, fall of the American Empire, is going to be split up into two chunks of 15 minutes. And the gist of it is, going to be pretty straightforward. Hopefully I can retain focus as I do my regular chores here. I should actually aim my nano away from my mouth so it's not so loud. So for the first 15, we're going to talk about one of the things that has led to the fall, and that is a lack of limitations. One of my favorite things to be confused and frustrated about is the absurd success of Facebook. One of the basic sort of logical rules of life, or guidelines of life, is to not put all your eggs in one basket. And so many people like just flock to Facebook because it's like, imagine one television network or, one telephone company. I mean, that shouldn't be too hard for some people, because if you're old enough, you remember the world with America with one phone company anyway. And it sucked. They could charge whatever they wanted, and we had to pay for it. And nobody had any freedom. And while there are alternatives to Facebook, there really aren't any alternatives to Facebook, because stupidly every 500,000, is it 500 million? It's 500 million people, I think, according to Facebook numbers, as I recall, have jumped onto the Facebook bandwagon. So it kind of doesn't leave us with much choice. If we want to reach people, we have to be on Facebook. And I've actually pulled a majority of my cross-posting apparatus off of Facebook. What does Facebook have to do with the fall of the American Empire? Well, put simply, excessiveness. Mark Zuckerberg is the CEO, and he's well known for being a douche, and from the sound of it, always was a douche. I haven't seen The Social Network yet, the movie about Facebook and him. My nano keeps flopping back out. I'm trying to keep the mic under a piece of fabric to be a little less distorting. So Zuckerberg is like, getting richer by the second. So he probably doesn't really care if the Social Network movie makes him look like an ass. I know I wouldn't. I guess I'd be a little disappointed, but whatever. I'm rich, bitch! Dave Chappelle said it best with that quote there. So why is it okay for Zuckerberg to just get rich every second and for Facebook to be so huge? It's like one of the reasons you can't really have Godzilla is because the actual mass of his muscles would be too much for the fabric of his muscles to support, and the bones and so forth. So in order for him to exist as a real life creature, he wouldn't be able to, because he would violate essentially the laws of physics and the way that bones and muscles and so forth and end up being designed by, you know, just the way Mother Nature works. He just would crumble under his own weight. Same way you couldn't build an entire building out of gold. It would just be too heavy for it. It would just fall apart. It would actually, I think it would start to bend over. It would bow under its own weight and then eventually crack and break. And, you know, and the men who designed the American economy had this idea that that if we switched away from a precious metals based, you know, economy, i.e. the gold reserve, the gold standard, if we switch away from that, we'd be able to get around that whole limitation thing. We'd be able to expand our economy forever because we have the power to just create more money when we need it. And as long as we only create it to expand the economy, to keep the economy going. So in other words, the theory is that, you know, if everybody's slowing down, if loans are too expensive, the interest rates are too high, whatever, all they have to do is lower the interest rates and people will go, okay, cool, I'll take out another loan. And then what essentially lowering the interest rates does is print more money. Anytime you get a loan, it's essentially printing money. I've gone over this before in the 666 cast. But to put it in a quick nutshell, you know, you're essentially, you know, the theory is, oh, I'm loaning out this $10 that somebody else put in my bank. And it's like, yeah, but now that $10 exists twice in the economy. But once, first as the guy who deposited it into his account at your bank, and then again as the guy, as the $10 the guy you just loaned it to has. Does that make sense? So it's actually represented in the economy twice. So that's literally printing new money. And so that's actually a violation of physics. Now, for part two of the Fall of the American Empire, 666 cast, whatever, I actually have a big conversation. There might be actually multiple parts, like more than two, because I had a good conversation with my old buddy, Stu, who's a very smart guy. He doesn't like to admit it. He's humble. But we had a conversation about this, so I won't go too much into it. And I recorded it, so I'm going to cut it in to the next podcast. I just haven't had time this week to cut it, or else you'd be hearing his voice now. But what I'm trying to get at is that there's this idea that we can just do this limitlessly and not have any consequences. You know, as though there are no physics involved in money, and that's just not true, as I just established, because, you know, when you're printing money, you're lowering the value of all the other money out there. That's just physics. That's just financial physics, right? The less of something you have, the more valuable it is. The more you have of something, the less valuable each individual thing is, right? That's just one of the basic tenets of economics. Yet, you know, the basic way our economy works is not that way. We take out debt. We take out loans. We are a debt-based economy, quite literally. And, you know, and so we're ignoring the basic physics here. And so here comes Facebook. It keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. 500 million users or registered accounts. Those are not all active, which is something that the media never talks about. And certainly Facebook never talks about it. But that's a whole other thing. You know, it's just so huge. And it's like, and there's more than just the economic physics involved here as to why they shouldn't be so huge. I mean, the economic physics are obvious that it's going to get so big and have so many users that it won't be able to support it. It won't be able to support them no matter how big how many servers they have. They're not going to be able to keep up with their users, just because. I mean, they're just there'll be a point at which there aren't enough computers to do it, and they won't be able to innovate fast enough to keep up. And, you know, and then short of that, well short of that, I feel like we're already reaching a point at which Facebook is just too absurdly successful to be useful anymore. I mean, it's like kind of like YouTube. It's like years ago, it was like, you know, oh, well, YouTube's great because, you know, you can get an audience really fast. But now you're competing with so many other people that it's just like, dude, I don't even like putting my videos on YouTube now because I'm competing with, first off, really retarded programming. And I use that word in the literal retarded sense, like slow, stupid, not mentally handicapped. I'm not making fun of anybody. I'm literally just using that word as it was originally intended. So why is it okay for Zuckerberg to go so big? Why is it okay? Why do we put up with it? Why do we let it happen? I know some people. I know particularly one of my listeners, one of the 666 cast listeners, Jeff out in Japan. He's not on Facebook anymore. He did one of the most bravest things anybody's ever done. You know, in a really simple way. No offense, Jeff, but you're not saving the planet or anything. But you are setting a great example, which is, you know, he decided one day he's done with Facebook, and I don't know if he deleted his account or just removed all the content or put it on, you know, such a high privacy level that no one could get in or no one could see it. I'm not really sure, but he's not on Facebook anymore. He's certainly not active on Facebook, and that's cool. Like I said, I've minimized my involvement with Facebook, and I post just my tweets go over to Facebook, and not even that many go over. No, that's not true. What am I talking about? Sorry, I got distracted. I'm holding nasty leftover pasta in my hand. Only my tweets go over, and nobody really comments on the tweets for some reason. You know, which is fine, because I really don't want an excuse to go over to Facebook, because Facebook is just annoying to me, and it's a lot of extra crap, and we're all being used, and nobody wants to talk about that, the fact that Zuckerberg is getting rich off of our data, off of our content. This is another reason I don't care for YouTube so much. It's that, you know, it's like we provide our content for free, and they get rich. And, you know, YouTube is all like, oh, well, you know, you have to get like X thousand hits or whatever, and then you can share your revenue. And I'm like, or with us. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I don't want to, I don't want to wait that long. It's like, why can't I make, you know, a tenth of a penny off of every 1,000 viewers I get already? Why do I have to, you know, meet your stupid criteria to start making at least something? I mean, if I can make $1 a month, off of YouTube, that's a dollar more than I'm making now. So, you know, combine that with a bunch of other revenue streams I'm developing, you know, that's okay with me. You know, it's the new media world, so this is how we're supposed to work it. Anyway, so the point is, you know, when is Facebook going to get too big for itself to survive? Maybe it won't, because YouTube is obviously still functioning, but, you know, I sort of feel like that's not the case for the economy. And now as we roll into the second 15 of the 666 cast this week, that's really the problem with our economy. Now, this is what's happening to the American Empire. This is what happened to the Roman Empire back in the day, is they got too overextended. You know, they couldn't pay their soldiers. They couldn't keep all their slaves in line and all that. So at some point, you know, and it wasn't like an overnight thing, as I recall. I mean, it's been a long time since I've read about the Roman Empire, but as I recall, it wasn't like a, you know, fall of Saigon moment. It was just a slow trickle away from power, where all of a sudden, you know, the Roman Empire became irrelevant. That's my understanding. I could totally be wrong, like I said. If that's what I remember reading
in school. Not that I read very much. We didn't really talk about actual history. But anyway, so, you know, and that's more or less what's happening now to the American Empire. And now I know a lot of people are saying, oh, but Pete, we don't really have an empire. We don't have, you know, conquered lands. And it's just like, well, yes, we do. It's called the capitalist market. Really, that's what America has been all about since the beginning, developing capitalist market. I mean, we were so blatant about it during the Cold War. It's like, we're fighting communism. Well, what's communism? Essentially, effectively, the opposite of capitalism. You know? So instead of, you know, owning, you know, everything as communism does, we make everybody pay for everything. Because communism is everybody owns everything, right? Anyway, okay. So it's that whole economic physics thing that is happening once again. You know, Rome couldn't make money fast enough by expanding its empire. And our economy isn't growing anymore. Now, I know that some people are like, oh, but it has. That's how we knew the recession was over, like last summer. Because in two quarters in a row, the economy did not shrink. And so they're like, okay, this counts as the end of the recession. But it only grew 1.3%, I think, less than half of what I guess is considered normally healthy, 3%. And let me tell you, I mean, maybe over the great span of American history, 3% is a reasonable growth rate. But to me, it just doesn't seem like that big of a deal. I mean, 3% is negligible. I mean, how many polls do we see every time we turn on the news, and the you know, the margin for error is like, you know, 3%. You know, it's like, I just can't think of 3% as being that big of a deal, but apparently that's a healthy, growing economy, and we're at less than half that. So the recession's over, you hear? Wow, it's not over, because we're still facing the same problems where we haven't figured out a way to make sure that our economy keeps getting richer, thanks to our military intervention. So we go into Iraq and make it safe for capitalism, well, in theory. I mean, there's a Cinnabon over there, so, you know, that says something, right? You know, and we've got troops around the world, combat troops around the world. They may not be taking part in officially sanctioned combat, but they all have guns. And, you know, and so what do we have to show for it? We have a ridiculously extended military, and we're essentially fighting three wars now. So everybody knows Iraq isn't over. We still have 50,000 soldiers there, and people are still dying. So, you know, there you go. Then there's Afghanistan, and now the press is calling, the press is starting, the brave part of the press is starting to call Pakistan our third Middle East war. So, you know, we're just extending ourselves beyond, you know, anything we can support in the military. And so as a result, the United States has been borrowing, the United States government has been borrowing money hand over fist since the early days of the Bush administration. And every so often you'll hear in the news that they've upped the amount of their cap. They have a cap that says we can only borrow so much from the Fed. And that cap was the only safety valve on excessive spending. And let me tell you, you know, Republicans out there who are like, you know, responsible spending, stop, you know, all the spending and, you know, whatever. And it's just like, no, sorry, you guys are doing it probably way worse than the Democrats, you know? And it's like, it's just your hypocrites. I don't want to get into the politics thing again, but so the point is, you know, our economy has grown. Our economy is quite literally a bubble in the first place. It never represented actual wealth. It always represented imaginary wealth, like wealth in our heads, value, quote unquote. You know, and as a result, it wasn't based on anything tangible. So, in theory, you know, I think the guys that created the Federal Reserve in the first place, the Federal Reserve Act back in 1913, I think the idea was that we could just keep inflating the bubble forever. But the fact of the matter is, we have finite resources. We have finite people. And I think to a certain degree, we have finite interest in an endless flow of wealth. It sounds weird, but it's like, look at what's going on with the economy now. It's like the interest rates are so crazy low. The Fed can't lower interest rates much lower than they've already done. And we're still not back on our feet. Loans still aren't going out like hotcakes. And people are just hesitant to want to be in debt. Because debt now has this really negative stigma attached to it. Understandably so. And so we don't appear to be interested in taking out more debt in the hopes of being rich one day. I think because we realize that that doesn't work for everybody. You know, so we don't have this infinite font of greed to draw from. And I think that's what the problem is. So basically, the damage that can be done by this excessive greed, everybody realizes this now and is backing away. And, you know, because we see that, you know, if you just keep expanding and keep expanding the way Enron did or the way the mortgage industry did with you know, the subprime loans and all that, eventually you will crumble. Things will fall apart. The pillars that you stand upon will crumble underneath your feet. And you will fall. And that's what's happening. This is the fall of the American Empire right now. It's just happening really slowly because those pillars, you know, are crumbling slowly. And the force of economic gravity is much easier to sort of distract from and not literally slow down, but effectively slow down. You know, so we can distract, like, the unemployment numbers aren't so bad, but they would be if we actually counted the number of people who were out of work. You know, and 9% and change to 10%, whatever it is at right now, right this second, is bad, but, you know, they're going to say, oh, it could be much worse. You know, they're busy rationalizing it. They're distracting from the realities. And so as a result, we don't notice it happening, or we don't notice it that much happening. I think if you're jobless like me, you know, and you're watching prices, you know, sort of crawl up. I'm actually a little surprised that they're not going up faster. But there's so much that I can't buy and that I used to be able to buy. And of course it helps that I'm not really making any money off of any of my internet stuff anymore. But I mean, I used to make some money off of random things that I used to do on the internet. And of course I used to have stable day job work, but yeah, so it's like, you know, it's pretty obvious that we're going down and we're not really coming back, and but because everyone's trying to bury their heads in the sand, at least the authorities are, everybody in the news, the media, are people who are supposed to be watching our backs are in fact, you know, hiding and not hiding from the truth and not willing to face it. You know, I think this is the first world is at least America. I shouldn't say we have the market cornered on the first world, but I think of the first world countries, we definitely have, we are the biggest of the first world countries, and I think that's changing. I think we're dropping down. We're going to be Canada soon economically, which is scary because we have way more people than Canada, so that means the same wealth of Canada is going to be distributed. And I'm not saying literally exactly the same wealth as Canada, I'm saying roughly. You get the idea. And so that same amount of wealth is going to be distributed, or roughly that same amount of wealth is going to be distributed across all of us. And that's going to be painful. And I think I've mentioned Tom Friedman's book, The World is Flat, and I think the big thing that never came out, at least in the press when he was hawking that book years ago when it first came out, is that, you know, it's like, sure, you know, it may be, thanks to globalism, the world is getting to be flat, but, you know, in India, we're doing a lot for poor people. It's like, I always hear he uses this defense, and I've heard others use this defense that, you know, oh, well, globalism is great because, you know, look how many jobs it created in India. You know how many millionaires are in India now? And I'm like, don't really care about India. I mean, I do, but I want the best for everybody, but it's like, you know, we're losing our jobs to India. There's a reason. It's like our jobs went straight to, so many jobs of ours went straight to India. So yeah, it would make sense that now all of a sudden there's a bunch of millionaires there, because there's not a bunch of millionaires here anymore, you know, or less of a chance of them, because the people who would have started work at a, you know, say a support, a customer support company here can't get that job. And if they had gotten that job here, they might have moved on to create their own customer support company and would be millionaires themselves. But now that millionaire is living in India. You know, so that's the thing that globalism proponents and Tom Friedman in particular don't really talk about. You know, it's like, yeah, job creation is great, but let's create some here. We're losing them all. And so as our economy, or as our strength overstretches its ability to, you know, bring us benefits, to bring us value, you know, it's starting to crumble around us. And our strength is always the reach of our military and the reach of our influence. But for some reason, we're only in it for the corporations now. The corporations are really the first-class citizens of modern America. I think I've even mentioned this before in the podcast. We're no longer the dominant life form on planet Earth. The dominant life form is now corporations. We just haven't noticed it. And, you know, and corporations can give as much money as they want to campaigns, which means they can pretty much pick who wins and who doesn't win in elections. You know, I mean, it's just a sad state of affairs. And so the American empire is falling apart. I think I just cracked the 30-minute mark here. My hands are wet, so I can't check this exact moment. Oh, yay, I'm almost done with dishes. Ah, cool. So that's my thesis. That's my idea as to why the American empire is falling. It's the sort of Facebook Roman Empire effect, where we're getting just so big that we can't support our own weight. That our economy is getting so big and it's built on nothing, so naturally we can't support our own weight. And it's scary, because we're all going to take a hit. We're all going to take a slow but noticeable hit. It won't be noticeable right away, but the fall won't be noticeable right away. But it will be noticeable in 10 years. We'll look back on, you know, 2012, 2013, maybe 2012 will be the end of the world, just not the way we think it will be the end of the world. Excuse me. You know, so think about that, I guess. And please let me know your thoughts. Next week, we're definitely going to have, assuming I can work it into my schedule, going to have my buddy Stu on, going to be chatting with him, and you can hear our conversation, or some of our conversation from last week. Hopefully it won't be too dated. we're not quite past 30. Sorry, I dried my hands. We're only at 28. I think I still will wrap it up since I'm already heading down that road there. So we'll be talking about, Stu and I talk about basically the same stuff I've been talking about today, but you can hear his take on it. He's a dad, new dad, works in, I guess you'd consider it textiles, bags, handbags, anyway, but he's also a photographer. He and I have known each other since college, really he's an artist. And he's just found himself in a position where he needs to support his family. So he keeps working his ass off at a job he doesn't really care for. And so that's his backstory. And so next week you'll be able to listen to him talk about his points of view regarding this whole end of the American way thing. Or the American empire thing, I should say. So thanks for listening so much. Do let me know what you think. Feel free at replyme at website 666 on Twitter, or you can use the ask. I think there's an ask link. Just go to website 666.com/ask, and you can leave me, you can ask me a question or whatever you want to say to me. You can say it there. You can also use the contact link on thepete.com.
And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for listening to the 666 cast, episode 27. Talk to you next week. Take care. The Pete signing off.